Hey there, and welcome to The Greenhouse. I'm Breath on the Wall.
And I'm Anna Snow. And today we're going to be talking about all things planet Earth.
Coming up later in the show, spring training is in town. We'll talk about how baseball is trying to make their sport a little more sustainable on the field.
But before that, we're going to talk about a train derailment that happened this month in Ohio. And you might be thinking, how is a train derailment have anything to do with the greenhouse and the environment? Well, that train happened to be carrying a lot of toxic chemicals that are now in the environment.
Yeah, and it seems like it spilled a lot of chemicals,
yeah.
And people took forever to clean it up. So we want to give you a little bit of a timeline. So this train derailed in Ohio. It was going from Illinois to Pennsylvania. As we said, the train released toxic chemicals and contained a key area of natural infrastructure. Now, this was in East Palestine, Ohio. At first, when I heard about this, I thought it was like Palestine.
Because it's spelled like that.
Exactly. But it's in Ohio. So now the EPA has stepped in. So this has become a really big national issue as people try to clean up. So
yes. So all of this happened on February 3rd, and it was a 38-car train. And like I said, it was making its way from Illinois to Pennsylvania. The train was a Norfolk Southern train, and it was carrying some deadly toxins called vinyl chloride in 11 of its cars. They were being transported in the form of little plastic pellets, and the axle of the cars heated up because the train was going so fast, which is what caused it to derail.
Exactly. So not all of the cars had bad stuff, like toxic chemicals in it, but all of the 11 cars were the ones that derailed.
Of course,
and they kind of spilled them. And these were so toxic. Vinyl chloride is something like you can't handle as humans. So what they chose to do is they chose to burn them, and it released a lot of like smoke into the air of this vinyl chloride.
And in a preliminary report from NTSB, which stands for the National Transportation Safety Board. There were 115,580 gallons of vinyl chloride, which is like a crazy amount.
It seems like a lot based on, like, I don't know how much a regular 38-car train carries, but it had a lot.
Yeah, and I didn't even know what vinyl chloride was before finding out about this story, but it's used for basically making different types of plastic and specifically, like, packing materials. So, of course, we've got more microplastics and plastic pollution.
Exactly. See, not even before the end product of plastics, plastic production.
Plastic production is a big problem in addition to just the disposal of plastic. But that's a discussion for another episode of The Greenhouse.
Exactly. Vinyl chloride is highly flammable. Okay. And that's why scientists and experts decided to burn it, because that was the easiest way to kind of get rid of it.
But that releases the toxins into the air.
Mm-hmm. And it's also releasing it into the soil and everywhere else. Even senators from Ohio. Now, really quickly to get into the politics, a lot of times Ohio can have like a certain political connotation.
Yeah.
But even they are, you know, saying like this is affecting our environment. There are two senators, Sherrod Brown and J.D. Vance, have pleaded with the EPA, which is the Environmental Protection Agency, to be careful when it came to the burning of this. Something to note about the burning. When the vinyl chloride pellets were burned, it released in a form called dioxins.
Okay.
So what these are, the World Health Organization helps us define them. These are particles that stay in the environment basically for a long time, a lot more than the normal way.
And the main way that these dioxins can cause problems for humans is when they enter your body through food and drinks, and they can accumulate up the food chain. So if, you know, the chicken that you eat had the dioxins, then now you have the dioxins.
Exactly.
And in an article from PBS points out that it can take as much of 7 to 11 years before the effects of dioxins can actually become apparent.
So a lot of neighbors are, like, upset right now that this train kind of derailed in their neighborhood, and no one really knows like who should be cleaning up or how to go about cleaning it up. And then this fact that it takes 7 to 11 years for the effects to become apparent makes it even more scarier, because you're told that it's being cleaned up, but now
you don't
how
really
can
know.
You tell for sure?
Yeah. And I'm also interested to, I guess they said it's highly flammable, which is why they want to burn it. But I feel like couldn't they like scoop it up or something? I don't know. Like,
it, I think amidst all the destruction as well, mm-hmm. With like the toppling of the trains, it yeah. was hard to do. But so that I don't know why they chose mm-hmm. to.
Because that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me, because it's releasing all of these chemicals into the air
for doesn't us to breathe them in. Doesn't it make it spread more?
Yeah.
It's yeah. Maybe, I'm sure there's experts in train derailments, because yes. train derailments are a lot more common than we thought, and that's something we're mm-hmm. going to get to in a little bit.
Yes.
Right now, people are also. So a lot of the toxins have burned already, mm-hmm. but now it's the more important conversation of how do you get rid of everything else that's been contaminated by this train derailment in East Palestine. So some of the soil is in the process of being taken away, cleared mm-hmm. out. There's a disposal site in Michigan that they're going to take some of them to. Others are taking to other places, but because mm-hmm. you don't want to put all of the contaminants in one spot in case they spread.
Yeah.
But the EPA says they're running out of places to kind of leave these contaminated materials.
Yeah.
Here's a number for you. More than 1.6 million gallons of contaminants, as well as contaminated water associated with the derailment, have been removed from the area. That's according to their governor. So remember that big number you tried to read out earlier, yeah. 115,000? That, but then the rest of those, like almost a million, mm-hmm. 1.5 million water. Gallons of water.
That's crazy. So I know that when you told me this number while we were writing up this script, I was like, well, how much is that? Like, is that most of it? Is there still a lot left? Like, I was like, how much total is there that needs to be removed? And we couldn't find that number.
Yeah.
So 1.6 million sounds like a lot, but I would really be interested to see like how big of a percentage of the actual total contaminants that actually is, which of course they didn't give us.
Yeah, exactly. And, one thing about this water thing, too, is a lot of problems that they're running into is private wells. So a lot of places in Ohio tend to, in here especially, mm-hmm. tend to be rural.
Okay.
And every person kind of has, like, wells on their property.
Okay.
And they're worried that this train derailment has kind of caused the toxins to go into the water supply of the wells.
Okay.
So they've tested, like, 70 of them, and they haven't gone back to us on like how the quality of it. But so in addition to these 1.6 million gallons, there's the thought of these wells are contaminated.
Yeah.
So not only has public stuff been ruined, potentially ruined, private stuff is also potentially yeah. ruined.
And also when you're removing this much soil, there's going to now be like a lack of soil and nutrients in the soil in that area. I would be interested to see if they plan on like replacing it at all, because obviously you have to take it out because it's contaminated, but now there's just like a hole in the ground where the soil was removed. Like, is it going to be fixed, especially for, you know, the wildlife that lives in the area? Like, soil, you know, that's like what they live on.
That's such an important point that I hadn't thought about yet, because mm-hmm. that's true. A lot of the things that we talk about on the greenhouse happens to do with not only how bad maybe someone did to kind of like gain resources,
mm-hmm.
but also the failure to like replenish it if yeah. you did take it, because some stuff you do have to take.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they thought about the soil and how much they're taking, because
yeah.
I don't have an exact number on it, but they're taking stuff to Michigan and other disposable sites
yeah.
by the truckload.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thought. They aren't thinking about that, but you know what they are thinking about?
Hmm.
The blame game.
Of course.
The governments are trying to like work together to see like who's responsible, who's going to foot the cost. So Pete Buttigieg,
mm-hmm.
he's our transportation secretary.
Yes, he is.
He toured the area, and he issued a statement saying more regulation needs to be done when it comes to the transport of hazardous material. Because I think that's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
The residents, the reason they're so upset
mm-hmm.
is because they didn't know hazardous material was on the train or was being carried through that rail line.
Yeah.
Because there's no rule requiring companies to say this train line that's going behind your house is carrying toxic materials.
Mm-hmm.
So I think neighbors are upset like, oh, we didn't know that, you know, we are this close to like
these toxins, yeah.
And you wouldn't want to live there if you knew that, you know, this something cancer-causing that can spread to the air comes, or you have no idea what's on that
yeah.
line.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And back home in Florida, I live so close to, like, a railroad line. I used to live a little closer than the home that my family currently has. But I'm driving over this railroad tracks all the time. I have to stop for trains all the time. Now I'm wondering, what are you carrying? What's on there?
Because they're always closed. Mm-hmm. I can never see
and
them.
They're not passenger trains. They're freight trains. Yep. I'm like, what do you have in there? Is it toxins?
Yeah. And this is another point. These trains are also getting longer.
Okay.
Like we said, these were 38 cars.
Yeah.
These trains are getting longer so that companies can cut costs.
But then you have less control from the engine.
And that's exactly what happened. One of their safety systems failed, and there weren't enough people on the train to kind of detect it until it got too late.
Mm.
So that's why the NTSB says this was preventable.
Yeah. Well, so the EPA is forcing the company that ran this train, Norfolk, to pay for all of these cleanup costs. And they have also been asked to stop shipping the toxic materials, which does seem good to
temporarily.
Me. It's temporarily. But I do think Norfolk Southern needs to pay for it because it's their lack of employees on the train and the length of the train cars or the total train, whatever,
yeah.
That caused this issue.
And I hope people will do something about it. Like, sure, this is bad, but it's also the time to start, like, looking ahead
mm-hmm.
To, like, what can be done for the rail industry.
Yeah.
Because cost-cutting is such a huge thing. I was telling you about how, like, trains are getting longer. We're seeing more and more derailments. In 2020,
yeah.
They had the most, like, train derailments, train leaks, you know, trains not going perfectly. There was only 20, mm-hmm. like, 20 such incidents, but that's 20 too many.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you remember this. This goes back to, like, a little bit of a news story.
Mm-hmm.
A couple, like, at some point last year, November,
mm-hmm.
there was big talk about rail companies going on strike.
Oh, and yeah,
President
I kind of remember
Biden
that.
Trying to do something. So, you know, this whole rail industry is a lot more nuanced than we were able to get into here in these last 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, so I like, I don't know where the money is at, like, who has the money.
Yeah, exactly.
But Norfolk Southern, which is the company that may have caused this derailment, has seen record profits. They're doing a ridiculous amount. And same thing with Union Pacific, which mm-hmm. is another train company that
yeah.
seems to make the rounds. But they've also slashed one third of their workforce in the last 20 years.
That's crazy. So,
it's interesting.
That's where their profits are coming from. They're not paying as many people.
And it's causing problems like this.
Of course.
And so we're currently doing this in late February.
Mm-hmm.
The train derailed on February 6th.
Mm-hmm.
But this has become a story for so long that we're talking about it now. And there's still fresh stuff that's happening.
Yeah.
Which is something that you don't usually see. Even, like, oil spills
yeah.
don't last this long or there isn't this much nuance. So this was, like, mm-hmm. this was a really weird story to talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
Coming up next on The Greenhouse, spring training is back. We're going to be talking about baseball and the way it's sustainable here in the Valley, but also the way baseball is sustainable as a sport. Stick
yes.
around.
This Stay right here.
Welcome back to The Greenhouse. I'm Preth on the Wall.
And I am Anna Snow. And spring training is back in Arizona. So out of baseball's 30 teams, 15 of them train here in the Valley.
The Cactus League.
The Cactus League. And also, I'm from Florida, which is the state where the other 15 teams have their spring training. And that's the Grapefruit League.
Yeah, two very fun names.
Yes, and two very warm states, which is why all of the northern baseball teams like to come and spring train here because it's still, like, snowy up in a lot of these places where other teams play.
But it's warm here.
Warm-ish. It hasn't been quite that warm.
I know. Last year was much warmer, but, like, we are not crossing 70.
Yeah, it stayed this year, off topic a little bit, but it has stayed cold a lot longer this year than it did last year.
Yeah, which I'm okay with.
I'm not, but let's continue.
So if you're not familiar with spring training, this is basically baseball's preseason.
Yeah.
It's a long preseason. Like, they're here for, like, a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of just to get, like, in the routine again slowly.
Yeah.
Teams in Florida and Arizona, as we mentioned, this year, spring training, it started earlier last week in February, and it will go until March 28th.
All right. So Arizona hosts, like we said, the Cactus League earlier, and this formed in the 1950s. Teams come to stadiums that are all over the Valley, and it turns out there are 10 stadiums here in the Valley. There are two teams that play at Surprise Stadium, two teams at the Peoria Sports Complex, two teams play at Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Two teams play at Goodyear Ballpark and one at American Family Fields of Phoenix. And then there's another stadium in Mesa and then one out near Paradise Valley and one in Tempe as well.
Yep. So if you are not familiar with Arizona geography, we'll tell you. It's a little far apart.
That's spread out. Yeah, all those towns I said, a lot of them aren't. Phoenix is kind of in the middle. It's kind of the central location, but all of these, like from one end to the other, it's a lot.
It is. We did the math. Like we plotted a trip if we wanted to go from the furthest stadium on either side of the valley. 50 miles.
Wow.
So if you're a true baseball fan, which some people are, like I was shocked that some people really like make vacations out of coming to watch spring training.
Yeah.
And they like try to hit every stadium. So being like the worst stadiums being 50 miles apart takes a toll on gas.
Yes, for sure. And this is very impactful. Obviously, one study found that the MLB is frequently quoted as spring training brings in $640 million. I'm having trouble reading the numbers today.
Well, they're big numbers.
They're big numbers. And then during the pandemic, that was decreased to $364 million. But I mean, that's because people couldn't go to the games in person.
Part of the time, they also canceled spring training.
They canceled a lot of the games, and then they also had much decreased capacity, where maybe only 25% or 50% of the people. They also did this thing where you could buy a cardboard cutout of yourself.
Did you ever buy one?
I did not.
I'll be so amazed, like 20 years from now, when I said, "Yeah, we put cardboard cutouts in the field."
And
fans.
Then you could watch at home and be like, "That's me." Also, what you could do is they were playing crowd noise so that it wouldn't be like dead silent. And if something there was like an app, and if something you liked happened, you could make the crowd noise louder.
That.
Yeah,
that is funny. So this year, the spring training is like back for the first time.
The first time at full capacity again. Yeah, so we're back fully.
So a lot of people are going to be coming from the Valley. We had Super Bowl a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it looks like the airports are not going to get any breaks.
Yeah. So if you're a sports fan, apparently Arizona's the place to be.
One article from the Mercury News says, it quoted the executive director of the Cactus League. So a big, you know, a big person. Their name is Bridget Binsbacher. And they say that 6 in 10 fans who come to the Cactus League are from out of state.
Yeah.
So that shows you that most people who come here need to, like, take a lot of transportation, need a car here, unless they're, like, find a way to their family here that are local.
Yeah.
So a lot of emissions, you know, come from that. And just to give you a little bit of an idea of the teams that play here, in the Cactus League, we have teams from Chicago, Cleveland, Kansas City that all fly out here, and so do their fans. So it's a little bit of a gap.
And it is important to note that any type of travel, it's hard to prevent. You're not going to stop people from going places.
Exactly.
But one thing that is true of Arizona is that we're a car-heavy state. You know, this is not a place where you can really get around super easily without a car. And so from the Surprise Stadium, which is in Surprise, to the stadium in Mesa, like we said, is 50 miles. And Phoenix itself has decent public transportation,
which is nice, and which
we have the light rail. You know, if you're in Phoenix and you want to go to a game in Tempe, that's a pretty easy commute. But the light rail doesn't go all the way to Surprise, you know.
It doesn't. So yeah, that 50 miles is a little bit of a gap. There's actually a funny story. This was from like years ago. The actor Will Ferrell wanted to do a little gimmick.
Yeah.
Where he wanted to play in 9 different games. Spring training games in the same day with 9 different positions, and every inning, because baseball has 9 innings, he would like go to a different stadium. And I remember he would like take a helicopter from game to game, and he would land in the middle of in the field and like make a whole show about it, which is funny. And I laughed at the moment because I was like a kid when that happened, but also remembering that sometimes you need a helicopter
to do that
because especially you can't take a car.
If these teams are, you know, playing each other and stuff, you got to drive 50 miles to, you know, play the next team or whatever. And that's why baseball tends to do series where they will play 7 games in a row. That's why you have the World Series, because travel is so expensive. So when they do travel, they go there and
get
they
as many
play
games as you can.
Like 7 games in a row. Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, this vacation thing, you know, tends to be in March and March when a lot of people are like, okay, the year has started off well. We're about a quarter through the year. Let's take our first vacation
and
as
a
family.
Families are on, their kids are on spring break. So if you are bringing your kids, they're not missing school.
Exactly. And you won't only come for baseball. Maybe you want to, you'll come for baseball for a couple days and maybe you go to Grand Canyon or, you know, some tourism activity. You don't come just for baseball.
Yeah.
But that, again, that's more car heavy stuff. So it helps dollars wise, doesn't help emissions wise.
Yes. But there is one kind of solution. So the Visit Arizona trip. So this is put on by the tourism agency, visitarizona.com. And they've created three separate trips that will take you to the MLB spring training stadiums all around the area. So I assume it's like a,
it's like a bus. And they just take you from like sights to see in Arizona, which is pretty cool. I, at first I misinterpreted this when I was looking at it. I thought it takes you on like a tour to every 10, all 10 stadiums here.
Yeah.
And you go see a game. It's like one of those tours, but it takes you from like a stadium to like places to see. So it's still a pretty cool thing. And you kind of get like both things checked off on your to-do list.
Yes.
But you know, this, we want to talk about more than just spring training since baseball season is around the corner.
Yeah.
Baseball is one sport that uses some of its resources in a non-sustainable manner. So we wanted to break that down for you. Water usage is big. Now, it's not as bad as golf.
Yeah. As bad as golf.
But it is way up there. And the reason is, obviously, you got some grass in the outfield that you got to water.
Yeah.
Which you have to do. But I remember going to baseball games, and I used to laugh at them because they used to water the infield dirt for some reason. So they would just spray water on the dirt, spray water on the mound. And I thought, that's so weird. But it turns out they do this to, like, make it easier and, like, it hardens the soil up a bit. So that it's not, like...
loose.
Not loose, but it's also not muddy. So there's, like, a special type of water they need.
Or, like, a special, like, exact ratio that makes it, like,
perfect. And it makes it, like, the normal dark brown that you usually see on the baseball field.
Yeah.
As opposed to a light brown.
Because the lighter brown, then it's just loose. Kind of, it's too dusty, I guess, if you don't water it the right amount.
Exactly.
And so the average baseball field is 100,000 square feet of turf, which uses 62... I've got all the numbers today.
Yeah, you did.
62,500 gallons of water a week. And that is about enough water to supply to 89 homes in a week.
So that's... it's a trade-off that you're doing per week. So some stadiums have taken, like, you know, a creative way to, like, solve this problem. Take the Los Angeles Angels stadium. They use recycled water, recycled groundwater to supply their stadium, which is, you know, something that's, you don't need fresh water on that, all that dirt.
Yeah. So other stadiums have not had as much success. So sticking with Southern California, the San Diego Padres do not have access to this recycled water. So they use drinking water to replenish their field.
Which I found really funny. Is it? Because isn't that what you want to save as much of as you can?
Yeah. And then the Dodgers attempted to build a pipeline, but neighborhoods did not want to have construction. So that got shot down.
Yeah. It was a 2-mile-long pipe, but I guess there was no... the neighbors voted down the construction.
The
I don't
HOA
know where
no.
the Dodgers stadium is, but I guess it must be in a neighborhood where the neighbors have power to kind of like protect their area.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if you've heard the term called not in my backyard.
I have, yes. Not
in
my backyard.
And it's a really interesting topic that I think spans in a lot of environmental issues.
George Carlin is the one who talked about that.
Really?
Yeah. George Carlin. Shout out George Carlin. He's also the one that came up with the 7 words you can't say on the air.
Oh, really?
But yeah, he's the one who came up with that concept of not in my backyard.
Yeah. It's really interesting because, like, it's an interesting concept that we'll talk about later. Because, now, we don't want to completely say baseball isn't doing sustainable stuff. They are... attempting to. They have a they have like a green program, which a lot of people do. But we want to read exactly what they say because it was a little hard to tell what they wanted. They were being a little vague with it. Here's what, it's a little long of a sentence. Major league clubs emphasize and practice sustainability through waste diversion, composting, sustainable purchase, water conservation, and energy efficient practices throughout the year. Efforts include on-site gardens, green teams to collect recyclables, LED fuel lighting, and solar panel installations. They do not mention water too much. I mean, they said water conservation, but they didn't say how.
And some people will say, well, then use artificial turf. And 5 out of the 30 official MLB teams do have artificial turf, and one of them is the Diamondbacks. But artificial turf is made of plastic.
So that is a problem, but it's a lesser of two evils.
Yeah, it's like, well, because I would say in a place like Florida, where I'm from, where it rains so often and there is an abundance of water, it would probably be better to just have real grass and water it. Whereas here, when we're constantly in a drought and in a desert, it's harder to get that water. But then, I mean, we talked about how not just the disposal of plastic, but also the creation of plastic earlier in our show also be toxic and cause problems. And turf cannot be recycled after. It has to be thrown out.
Yeah, and MLB is a little behind on the curve when it comes to these artificial turfs. The NFL uses artificial turf for some of their fields. They have about 14 of the 30 stadiums. So MLB has some progress to make, but they're thinking about it. They have a green program.
Yes. Yes, I think they're working on it, and I think there definitely are things they can do to improve. But, you know, it's America's pastime. We're not trying to hate on them.
Yeah.
We would just like – I mean, and like I said, using the recycled groundwater is a great way –
Great solution.
And, you know, Los Angeles is a place that's similar to Phoenix. It's hot and they have a lot of droughts. So,
yeah. Thanks for joining us on this greenhouse. It's our last episode before spring break, so enjoy it. I'm Pratham Bilal.
I am Anna Snow, and enjoy your spring break. But we will be back the following week with all things Planet Earth.
All right. Have a great day.